Good morning.
Good morning.
This is December 3rd, 2002. We are in Natick, Massachusetts, and this tape is part of the Morse Institute Libraries Continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is John Coates. Our cameraman is Robert Dunbar. We are privileged to have with us today Everett Kimball. Good morning. I understand your friends call you Ev.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Ev, may I ask when and where you were born?
February 29th, 1924, at Framingham Union Hospital.
So that means you get a birthday every 4 years?
How'd you guess? So I'm not that old, really.
No, you're not. You're just about 20 years old, aren't you? What is your current address?
Hopkinton, Mass.
Hopkinton?
Without an N.
Okay.
Without a G.
And your marital status?
Married.
And do you have children?
Three boys.
Can you tell us when and where you entered the military?
When and where?
Yes, sir.
I went to Great Lakes Naval Training Station in Illinois. And I left Framingham at December 30th, 1940. 42.
You enlisted then in, say, the greater Boston area or Framingham?
Out of the Framingham post office,
okay.
Where it was at the time.
Why did you join at that time? Were you called into the military? Or
I volunteered.
You volunteered?
All my friends were going in, so.
And you joined the Navy. Why did you pick the Navy? You had choices, I guess.
Well, it seems like the best thing to do for me. I thought it would be more adventuresome.
Any history of the Navy in your family? Anybody ever?
No. No.
And you said friends had gone in too. Did they all go into the Navy?
Yes.
Did you go in with a group? Were you all by yourself?
I was with Doug Taylor at the.
A friend of yours?
A friend of mine, yes.
So the two of you went into Boston one day and signed up, is that it?
We signed up in Framingham.
In Framingham.
Yeah.
And now you've told us that you were sent to Great Lakes, Illinois.
Yes.
Is that for basic training?
Basic, yeah.
Tell us what they did and what you did there.
Well, we supposed to learn seamanship and gunnery. Mostly gunnery, but we still had to learn something about the Navy.
Was there any place before Great Lakes where they decided what to do with you in the Navy, what particular jobs you would do? Or did you go directly from Framingham, Boston, out to Illinois?
Yeah, directly.
And you are learning gunnery. What does that mean?
Well, use small arms and 20 millimeter machine guns and surface guns and so forth like that. All the way
up to, say, 5 inches or something like that?
That was the biggest we had, 5.
And did you, I'm not going to say did you like that kind of work, but were you interested in, had you ever had any experience before with guns, with firearms?
Just small arms, that's all.
You plunked 20, around with a 22 or something.
22 plinking cans and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. What time of the year you were in you signed up in December?
Yes.
Of 42, so it was pretty cold out at Great Lakes, I take it.
It was worse than this. And it curtailed some of our, we couldn't do any close auto marching or running or anything. We had too many broken legs on the ice.
Really?
Yes. They had to curtail it.
When you're at Great Lakes and you're learning to go aboard ship, do they have ships there? Are you on a Great Lake?
No.
So it's just called that?
Basics. Basic naval training.
And while you were there, is that where they decided what your job would be in the Navy?
Well, I think all along they had in mind the armed guard, because they were building the Liberty ships so fast, that they didn't have the crews to man them. So they even cut my training shot so they could get us on board these Liberty ships and get the cargo overseas.
For the purposes of this tape, would you tell us what a Liberty ship is?
It's a cargo vessel. It's a five cargo holds, and they were loaded with the booms, and so unloaded with the booms, and they carried, well, we carried sulfur.
So it's a transport vessel.
Yeah, transport.
And are these the ones that were made by the Kaiser shipyards?
That's right.
They turned one out every 37 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
A phenomenal rate of shipbuilding. And you you learned to be an armed guard on one of these ships. That's what they were training you to do.
Yeah.
How did they describe what an armed guard does on one of these ships? What did
Man the guns. They had surface guns and anti-aircraft guns. And the idea was to scare the enemy away from the ship. And you learn how to trajectory and range and so forth, and how to load and unload. That was the most important part, unloading and firing, then loading the ammunition back again so it'll be ready for firing again.
You generally, when we talk about a transport, you don't think of it as being armed. How much armament did you have on board one of these?
We had about six 20-millimeter guns and aircraft guns.
The cannons, 20-millimeter cannon?
Yeah.
Yeah, six
and
of those.
The first ship I was on had a 5-inch 50 surface gun, one of the old World War I vintage, which was practically useless.
Why is that? It just didn't work, or it was inaccurate?
Well, you consider the movement of the ship, the up and down and rocking motion. You couldn't hit a target within 10 miles. But it was, if you happen to be lucky, that was the whole thing.
Okay.
If you hit a submarine, beautiful.
How many 5-inchers were there on the ship? One, where was it?
Stern.
Right on the stern.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in charge of any particular gun or group of guns?
Well, we were trained to man all of them. If a gun crew got shot at one turn, you could go in there and take that over and do that. If a 5-inch 50 crew was wiped out, you could go and help on that. So man to do all the guns.
Port and the ship is loading or unloading, are you also guarding the ship while it's in that position?
Oh, definitely.
Or is it just against the aircraft or submarines? You're at all times guarding the ship.
The ship had to be guided at all times for saboteurs. Someone could sneak aboard any time, get through the security at the gate, so you had to be careful, because they could blow up the ship right in the harbor.
Was there any, was there a Marine contingent on board?
No, there wasn't.
It was strictly sailors guarding the ship. Okay, where did you go from Great Lakes?
Now, Gulfport, Mississippi, for more gunnery training.
Okay, they're gone.
And that's where we learned to shoot the large surface guns, because we went out in the Gulfport of Mississippi to get the sailors used to the firing and so forth of the large guns.
Tell us about target practice. What did you shoot at?
Oh, just random in the Gulfport, in the Gulf of Mississippi. But when I got back on shore, we had target practice with planes flying over with the, what they call those, a target behind them.
A sleeve.
The sleeve, and you try to shoot it down.
How long did this training take you? If you started out in December, about where are we now in 1943?
They cut us short on our basic training because they need, as I said, they need the armed guard. It was the middle of February when they sent us down to Gulfport, Mississippi.
And how long were you at Gulfport?
Gee, I can't remember. About 2 months, I think.
So you were pretty thoroughly trained if you were there 2 months. And then, let's say it's March or April of 1943. Where did they take you then?
We went out to San Bruno, California. And we it was more or less getting us ready to go on board ship. And from there, we went down to Brownsville, Texas, where the Liberty ship was being made that I was supposed to be on. And because that was a good time, we waited around to get a lot of Liberty down there. And then we got a chance to watch them build the Liberty ships down there. It was fascinating.
This was going to be brand new then.
Brand new.
You'd be the first guys that sailed on it?
Yeah, I missed the shakedown cruise because I had guard duty. But they said the vessel would do 13 knots tops, which was good for a Liberty ship. But you never could use that speed anyway because the fastest, you could only go as fast as the slowest ship in the convoy, which was 6 knots.
You could kind of sail circles around the rest of the convoy.
Yeah.
When did you finally put to sea then on board this ship?
Yeah, I can't remember. All those dates are... Well, I can say we left there and went on board ship, went up to Mississippi to Baton Rouge and picked up a cargo of sulfur. And that was quite a thing going up to Mississippi. And then from there we went back to Gulf of Mexico and went out around Florida up to New York.
Where were you taking this sulfur to? Where was it going?
Over to Liverpool, England.
Ah, you were going to take it over to Europe.
It was basics for ammunition. And well, we waited in New York Harbor for the convoy to make up. And they rigged us with, we had Sherman tanks on board and aircraft in crates on deck. And they rigged us up with, they put the booms out to either side and ran a net along the side for torpedoes, catch the torpedoes. And then they stuck us on the starboard side of the convoy without, well, we're sitting duck, you know.
Where did you pick up the tanks and planes? Where did you get that cargo?
New York. Aboard?
In New York.
Yeah.
When you went from Mississippi around Florida up to New York, first trip, tell us about the watches you stood and what procedures you had for watching for planes and especially submarines.
Well, it was two hours on and 8 hours off. We rotated and every night and morning we stood, everybody stood watch. Of course, we were pretty well protected by the coast because the zeppelins and the aircraft and so forth could protect us along the coast.
Still, they were sinking tankers off of New Jersey at that time.
Oh, they sunk a lot, yeah.
Did you, at that time, see any hostilities or anybody else submarine and it wasn't really a periscope?
If they were there, we didn't see them.
So you waited around New York Harbor now to make up a convoy.
Yeah.
Describe the convoy to us and sailing out.
Well, of course, they all went out through the... well, first we went around the Statue of Liberty, what they call Ellis Island, and they demagnetized the ship. The torpedoes wouldn't be lured as easily. And then they also boxed the compass. And of course, you had to demagnetize the ship so that it would be, the compass would work. And then we sailed out. And out in the outer harbor, they made up the convoy. It took quite a while.
Could you go back a second and describe this process of demagnetizing a ship? Does that call for putting cables around the ship?
That was the whole idea, and grounding it.
And you did that in New York Harbor?
Yeah.
In that busy harbor, you guys are sailing around boxing your compass?
All the way around. So they could box the compass, you know, all the way around?
Yeah. And then came the day. Did you have any idea where you were going?
They kept that top secret.
Okay. And the fellow that signed up with you,
I lost track of him.
You have all new shipmates. Can you look around that harbor for us now and tell us about the other ships you saw? Were there warships as your escort?
The Navy ships, yeah. It all depends on it. Mostly destroyer escorts. Let's see. Well, of course, there's a whole bunch of Liberty ships getting ready to go.
And like yours, yeah.
And oil tankers, too.
And where were you going? When you finally got there, what was your destination?
We pulled into Liverpool Harbor in England.
To unload the sulfur and the tanks and the planes and everything else. I'm trying to pin down a date here in reference to the invasion of Europe.
That was December.
That's June of 44, how close are we to that?
Well, I made another trip before that.
Okay, so you went back to the States.
Yeah.
What did you carry from Liverpool back to the States? Empty cargo, nothing?
They filled a bilge with water.
So it was cargo going the other way, nothing. And where did you come back to? Where did you pick up cargo?
In the States?
Yeah.
We went to Boston. Well, that is vague now.
I know, you went to so many ports. I neglected to ask you, what did Liverpool look like when you came in there? Had it been bombed?
It had been bombed, and it worked 24 hours around trip, you know, around the day and night to get it ready. They had to get it ready for receiving all this goods. And the poor stevedores were all wore out. But I say one thing, they were a happy crew, the stevedores. And you've probably heard the English, they have to have their tea. They'd come aboard in the morning with their teapots and stuff, which was funny to me. But it was like a coffee break, I suppose.
I think it's something like that, yeah. Did you see any signs of the German bombing? And more important, were you in a raid at any time? Did you see anything like that?
When we got there, you could see the damage that they hadn't fixed, and the oil was all over the water. And all the piers were covered with oil from the sunken ships and so forth.
Really?
But they had made it available so they could unload ships, which I gave them credit for.
How do you get sulfur in or out of a ship like yours? What form is the sulfur in?
Bulk.
So they, these big clam shells would come down and pick it up? Okay.
And that was another thing that I liked. They had a system where they pulled the little railroad cars up on a hill, and as they need them, they'd release the cars and they'd come down under the unloader and they'd tip them over and dump them into the cargo onto the little trains they had on the dock, which was, I thought was pretty unique because it was all done by gravity. And the elevator was run by water power. So I thought that was...
That's good common sense, isn't it?
Common sense, yeah.
Yeah. Any adventures on the way back to Boston? Again, did you have any sub-scares or shadowed by German planes or anything?
No, we had sub-chasers dropping ash cans, they called them. But that was as close as we got any action.
Okay, did you come back alone, or did they run convoys in both directions?
Convoys, yeah.
And you picked up another cargo?
I don't remember what it was.
Okay, and back to England?
Back to Swansea, South Wales.
Swansea?
Whatever we had on board ship.
It has a high tide there. And then a low tide. Mm. They have tides that are very high and very low there.
You'd have to come in on a high tide, yeah. And we picked up coal there, because England's good for coal.
Oh, the Welsh miners, that's correct, yeah.
I think we brought that back to the States because the British had oil burners and coal burners. So they'd go to the States with their coal burners. When they got there, they'd switch back to oil because they get oil from the States and go back that way. And we brought coal back to the States.
For the ships to pick up on the way back. Did you have drills while you were at sea? Did you guys get practice with your guns for that day when you
were? Oh, yes. We, not as much as I'd like, because after a while you lose the routine, like setting up the magazine on top of a 20-millimeter gun was an awful job. Then we had training in loading those.
The 20-millimeter cannons?
Yeah, the magazines.
Can you tell us again, so few people have experienced what you did, what is it like to be part of a convoy at sea? You said you had to go as, you could not go any faster than the slowest ship.
That's right.
Was there somebody always hanging back there that you guys were saying, for gosh sakes, I wish he could go a little faster? Did you feel more vulnerable because of these slow ships?
I felt quite vulnerable, yeah.
Did you see anything of the larger ships, the Queen Mary or the Queen Elizabeth, when they
were?
I saw
the Queen Mary.
You did.
We were fascinated with the speed. We come up over the horizon, next thing you know, it's good.
Yeah, that's not waiting for any convoy at all.
In fact, my brother was on the Queen Mary. A passenger carrier.
Troop ships.
Carrying the army. And what can I say?
Were you at any time in one of those wild Atlantic storms that we see in the... You know, the movies always show everybody getting in terrible storms, ice storms and cold and...
Were
your passages rough in the North
Atlantic?
Don't get
me started. we were 30 feet in the water, and that's pretty deep for a Liberty ship. So when the storm came, instead of going over the waves, you punched a hole right through it, and it would come up over the bridge, and it, after a while, the Sherman tanks on deck, they were held up by 12 by 12 beams on cleats. It hit so hard those big beams would come loose and float around, which was dangerous, because they could, you know, smash right through the portholes. But it didn't, but oh, what storms those were.
While all that was going on, were you expected to be back there on the stern with your 5-inch gun watching for something?
Yeah, you had to keep a watch, yeah.
You're 2 hours back there, right on the stern of the ship.
Well, we had a starboard and port watch up on the bridge, and we had a watch in the bow and two in the stern at all times. Yeah, I do. Question, what could you see with a storm?
But nothing much, I would suspect. England, Wales. Now, I have in my notes here that you also were at North Africa, is that correct?
Yeah.
When were you there? Is it after the trips to Wales and?
Well, we went from Southampton. We went from Swansea to Southampton, and we made trips to Africa from Southampton over to Algiers and Oran, bringing all kinds of stuff over.
To supply the army over there. Tell us about sailing through the Straits of Gibraltar and up into the Mediterranean. You're getting to see quite a bit of the world.
Well, it's just like a vacation, because there wasn't any action at the time, you know, any action. And it was good to see that part of the world.
Did you get ashore when you got to Algiers or any of those places?
Did I get a what?
Did you get ashore? Did you get any liberty?
Yes. Gee, Algiers, oh, poverty. I couldn't believe people live like that. Sewers running down the gutters. But now what got me was the compounds where they left all this supplies. For miles you could see jeeps and tanks and ammunition and stuff stored, getting ready for the invasion.
Well, you're also getting to where the German Air Force was pretty strong. Did you suffer air attacks when you went into the Mediterranean?
No. At night you could see some of the bombs and stuff, the flare, you know, the big light up and searchlights and so forth.
When you made a trip into the Mediterranean, from Southampton down through the Straits, are you alone now? You're not part of a convoy?
Well, only one ship could go through at a time, so that was kind of stretching out the convoy. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, to go through the Straits, did a group of ships have to go in through single file? Is that what you're saying? And then form up on the other side again. Boy, that must have been hairy. That's only 8 miles across there. You could...
Gibraltar was armed to the teeth with, you know, any aircraft and surface guns, so I think the Germans kind of kept away.
That's correct. You're under the protection of the forts on the side there. Good.
See, that was one of the things that bothered the Navy, because aircraft and so forth, dirigibles, could only patrol so far out to sea. Then you were on your own. All you had was your destroyer escorts for protection. It wasn't until later on that bombers and so forth could travel several thousand miles out to sea and protect, you know, watch for submarines and so forth. So technology was what really won our war, I think.
You talked about earlier demagnetizing your ship before you ever started. Are you still on the same ship?
Yeah, the Benito Juarez, yeah.
The Benito Juarez? And did you see other ships all around you in the Mediterranean? And then when you came out into the Atlantic, you kind of dispersed? And where did you go when you came left Africa? Where did you sail to?
We made several trips. Then we came back. Where did I go then?
Were you going back to the States, or were you picking up cargo now in England,
picking
and taking it
cargo
to Africa?
Yeah. And then we, after the invasion, we ferried stuff to the, after the invasion, but we, a month, we started hauling supplies in, but they could still see wreckage in the harbor.
Yeah, is this the Normandy invasion?
No, well, Omaha, around that area.
Okay.
I can't remember the names now, but.
All right, where did you put into? Where were you able to dock a ship like that?
You anchored out to sea in the, boy, had those little.
They take the stuff in on barges.
Barges,
yeah.
And so on like that. And we have to unload it right onto the barges. In fact, they hired the Navy crew to unload 5-gallon jerry cans of gasoline to get it off fast enough, you know, so I got a little extra pay that way. And
you spoke a moment ago of seeing wrecked ships and
yes.
Damage. Tell us what you saw. Because you were there, this is July of 44 now.
Right around there, yeah.
What did you see?
Well, there was a cargo ship had made it into port, and you could drive a Mack truck through the hole in the bow, and others was hitting the stern and had made it. So it was, you begin, boy, we're lucky.
The Benito Juarez, I'm not trying to move you faster along this track, but were you ever hit or bombed on this ship?
Well, we get ahead of ourselves here. It was William H. Prescott was on the second ship. That was the one that went back and forth to from Southampton to mm-hmm. Algiers and Oran.
Was it a sister ship of the Juarez, another Liberty ship?
They're all on the same die, same plans.
When did you leave the Juarez and go to another ship? This is Prescott, is it? William Prescott?
Yeah.
When did you leave the Juarez?
We left that in New York.
And got this other ship.
Yeah, in fact, that was after I got off, well, to Brooklyn Navy, Armed Guard Center in Brooklyn, and all my buddies were leaving. We were there at Thanksgiving time. So that must nail it down somehow. And I see all my buddies leaving, you know. Oh, they're shipping out here and shipping out there. And I went up to the office and I said, hey, what about me? I'd like to ship out too. About 2 hours later, I was on my way up to the docks and picked up a Benito Juarez because a fellow had been taken sick on board, William H. Prescott, and I was a replacement. And the new crew was wet behind the ears. They hadn't been out before.
So you're an old salt by this
salt.
Time.
Per se.
Can you remember where you went first in this new ship now?
No, I can't really.
Somewhere in here, you got out into the Pacific. Is that
yeah.
correct? And Is there anything else you want to tell us about the Mediterranean or the Atlantic before we get you to the other side of the world? Any other adventures in the Mediterranean?
No, just to get bombed when you get out into the Atlantic, and the Hinkle 111 dropped bombs but didn't hit anything. And that's where we used up all our ammunition. With the 20-millimeter guns were all out of ammunition after that.
Tell us about this now. This is an attack on your ship.
You know, when you're under attack, your mind goes blank. You try to follow your instincts and do what you were supposed to do, you know. And I can't remember anything about it, really. You're so busy. It always amazed me, you know. I can't remember a thing about it. It's a lot of noise.
How far off the coast were you that a Hinkle would attack you?
Oh, well, probably 10 miles, probably.
Not too far. Okay, can you tell us what you do recall about the attack?
What I could do?
Where were you on the ship? Were you at your post?
Steering 20-millimeter gun.
And somebody else, bomber or attack, or was there a signal on board the ship,
yeah.
General quarters, something
quarter,
like that?
Yeah.
And then you see a German plane.
Well, someone spotted it, yeah. I think I was down below somewhere.
Come running up under the deck, get
yeah.
to your gun. Did you fire at the plane?
I was, the crew on the 20-millimeter shot. All of 20-millimeters let go, you know.
Anybody hit the plane?
I couldn't hit the broadside. I was bound over the pig.
It
was just to frighten them off.
I take it that's a no.
You know, if you're in a field that's flat coming up, you lose your cool. So that's the whole idea, scare the pilot.
You told me before that part of one of the bombs landed on the deck.
The fin from the bomb, yeah.
So he must have gotten pretty close.
Pretty close, yeah.
But he didn't hit the ship. Well, you were lucky again.
My luck didn't run out yet.
Yeah. All right. Take us to the Pacific now.
Came home, had leave, and I came home for a 7-day leave. I was in Framingham at the time, up on Western Avenue. And it was kind of funny that all my friends were still. Well, I had one friend that had a murmur in his heart. He couldn't go, but we, you know, we enjoyed ourselves. Then we went. We went to Chicago, down to New Orleans, went over the Rockies. To San Bruno, California. We had more small arms training and marching and so forth there. And oh, we trained in 40 millimeter. No, wait a minute, I'm getting ahead of myself. Boy, we went down to San Francisco, picked up a passenger ship and went out to Saipan. And we knew it was a code, C-O-D-E, no, HODE. We only, what the heck is that? Well, that was the destination, but no one knew it was
Saipan. HODE was the code word for Saipan?
Yeah.
Saipan was June of 44, and now you had picked up, is this a totally different ship?
It was, what do you call a passenger ship in the service?
a troop transport?
Troop transport, yeah.
Okay, and was your job the same on this ship, to guard the ship?
No, I was completely out of the armed guard.
Okay, what were you doing on this ship?
We were nothing. ate and slept till we got to Saipan.
Oh, you went as a passenger?
Yeah.
No duty on board the ship?
Because we didn't know what we were going to do.
Neither did you know where you were going, is that correct?
No idea.
And when did they announce to you over some loudspeaker, we're pulling up to an island pretty soon?
When we were close to the island, they said we're going to Saipan.
And what
never heard of it.
What did you think you were going to do ashore? Did you have duties that they expected of you or on board the ship?
Well, we were a naval supply depot, and the ships would bring the cargo into Saipan Harbor dock, and it would be unloaded. Trucks would bring it up to the warehouse, and our job was to take it and separate it into different, you know, this ship goes here and that ship goes there, the cargo and that cargo here. And when that ship came into dock to pick it up, we'd get it ready to put it on the trucks to take it down and put it on that particular ship. We kept track of their cargo.
Was the island secure at this time? The fighting was over?
When I first got there, they had sent out a patrol every morning to mop up the Japanese. Because a week before we got there, the Japanese had come down and shot up the chow line. And after that, it was secure. Now, they secured it about 3 weeks after that, so you could travel around.
Did you have any relationship with the Marine Corps at this point? Did you see any of the Marines?
Never had anything to do with the Marine Corps, no.
Okay.
The Glory Boys?
Yeah, the Glory Boys. The ships that you were loading, where were they going? Were they getting ready for another island up the chain somewhere?
They go to Okinawa and wherever they went.
And how long did you do this, Ev?
I was there just short of a year. And that was pretty good duty out there, because you could, our chief officer was a good guy. He let us have a Jeep, and he even go with us. We'd go up in the hills and pick bananas and stuff like that.
Were you there then when the war ended?
Yes.
Tell us about that. You're on Saipan in the Marianas, and the war is, it was up, Okinawa was
under attack,
going on at the end of it. How did you hear about what was going on elsewhere? Did you guys listen to radios or?
Well, the Navy was good to us. They gave us a nice big radio. We played records on it and everything. We got all the news that way. Of course, it was all these ships coming in to always tell stories what's going on.
Lots of news coming in from the guys,
We even close enough to where they developed some of the pictures from the raids they had. We had pictures of Kwajalein you wouldn't believe. Just nothing standing higher than that. Anyway, what's next?
Well, I'm interested in that you were at a very historic place. Did you see any, go around and looked at any signs of the battles?
That was another thing. The Japanese tried to persuade us not to shoot down the, do anything to the factories where they processed sugar, because that was their main crop over there was sugar cane. And intelligence said that building was full of Japanese soldiers. And I got the word from a buddy that was on the U.S. Massachusetts, that when they got word that they were hiding out there, they just cut that building right down to the foundation. Everything was gone. And that was another thing. There wasn't much standing when we got there. Gee, they did a good job on that island. They had to, because they're always hiding in caves and popping up and shooting, sniping.
I wondered about that. If you arrived at this island before it was fully secured, how long after that did you finally feel safe that you could go around?
About a month.
About a month.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a little scary to be someplace where they had come down and shot up a chow line?
Oh yeah, but you were there. Where are you gonna go?
Yeah, that's a good question. You're on Saipan. The war ended. You must have had quite a few points by this time. You'd been in the service a long time.
But I wanted to, what they call it, strike for
get another promotion.
Officers.
Yeah.
So I studied up and got storekeeper third class.
What was your rank at this time?
I was seaman first.
Seaman first.
Up until I made.
That's well done. And you wanted to go on and become a petty officer. Were you thinking of shipping over for another couple of years?
Well, all our buddies decided, gee, this is pretty good duty. We'll sign over. Of course, when you get, I had to make more points to get out. That was the whole thing that killed me. So all my buddies went home, and I was still on Saipan. So I didn't mind. What were you going to do?
You were up there picking bananas up in.
Yeah.
You finally got to the point, though, that you were going to go home. Tell us about going home from Saipan. Were you lucky enough to get an airplane, or did you sail home?
It was on the Bornholm Richard.
Really?
Another
aircraft carrier.
No, wait a minute. Did I put it down there? No, it wasn't.
That's okay. But you sailed home.
Yeah.
And sailed from Saipan. Did you stop off at, say, Honolulu or anywhere, or go directly to the West Coast?
They went to Guam.
Guam first. Pick up people there.
Pick up people, yeah.
And then head right to the States?
Right to the States, yeah.
What port did you pull into in the States?
San Francisco.
Can you tell us about sailing under the bridge and knowing you were home?
Up on deck, throwing pennies up at the bridge.
Which is a long way up there. And were you discharged where?
They shipped me into Boston.
They took you home and then discharged in Boston.
Yeah,
and with what rank now? Seaman first.
To storekeeper third.
Storekeeper third. And with what decorations did you have?
I had the European, Africa, Pacific, and
American. And I'm trying to figure out if you were in long enough to get good conduct or you'd done something terrible.
I had good conduct and I got a Bronze Star on the African campaign.
Can you tell us about getting the Bronze Star? That's quite a decoration.
I don't know why I got it. I always was confused because it was kind of the attack on.
Was it because
Gibraltar
of the being on the ship
probably,
that when it was bombed?
Yeah.
What were your feelings about coming home? You'd been away a long time.
Well, fixed emotions. You get kind of like to see you, and all that goes with it, you know, but then you miss your folks and so forth. Because I wasn't married or anything. I hadn't even had a girlfriend, so I was free as a breeze.
You felt you got some catching up to do then.
Yeah, I guess
so. You were home. When you came home, did you sit and talk with your family about where you'd been and what you'd seen and what you'd done?
Yeah.
And what did they think of that? Hometown boy, and then you're talking to them about Africa, Straits of Gibraltar, Saipan.
Well, people at the time hadn't traveled that much, so they were interested in other countries and travel, so for a while it was pretty good talking.
Have you ever gone back to any of these places?
No, a friend of mine that I met, I was with in Saipan. He'd gone back to Saipan and told me about it. It was nothing like it was. All the warehouses are gone, and it's a tourist attraction now.
Yeah. I meant perhaps Swansea or Liverpool or...
I've always wanted to go back, but at the last minute, things didn't work out. I wanted to go back to see Peck. I had R&R over there in Cardiff, England. And from Cardiff, we went to the Lambeth where this Peck was. And they gave us, you know, 3 or 4 days of recreation and relaxation.
Is this in Wales? Is this in Wales?
Llandaff.
Llandaff.
Outside of Cardiff.
That's Wales, all right.
Yeah, Wales.
It's a nice country.
He had a beautiful home, all brick. And they had that peat for heat. He was a minister of foods over there, which was quite nice. And we slept in a feather bed. Oh, you'd sink right down into the... Wow.
You have some pretty good memories of that,
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
That's good. Did you join any unit of the military reserve, the Naval Reserve, after you got home?
I had to, because it was mandatory. When they let me out, I'd be in the reserves for 4 years. So I didn't mind.
All right. And how about a veterans organization, such as the American Legion or Veterans of Foreign Wars?
I joined the American Legion over in Sherman, post 237, which was very active when I got out. They were fantastic until they petered out, I would say. They went defunct. So I'm still a Legionnaire. I got a lifetime membership.
Oh, good. Have you received any veterans' benefits? Hospitalization, the GI Bill, GI insurance, something
like
that?
The GI Bill, I bought a home on. I didn't spend much money when I was in the service, because you didn't make much anyway, but I saved enough for a down payment on a home, and the GI Bill guaranteed my loan. That's all I ever used.
Have you ever attended any reunions? Of men you served with, anything like that?
Well, I signed up for the Armed Guard reunions, and so I never went to a reunion, but I met some of the men that I was with. In fact, they came out to Southboro and to a relative out there, and I, you know, met them out there. But I never did much more with it.
How important, Ev, for you was serving in the military?
Well, I thought I did my part. I mean, the more people that helped out, the better the consequences.
Do you feel that in any way it affected the rest of your life?
I think so, yeah.
In what way?
Well, I learned respect for authority, and I do my duty without any, no task seemed to be too hard for me when I got out, because some of the stuff was pretty hard we did. Mm. Well, I think I got a pretty good deal out of it. I helped the country.
When you look back on it, can you tell us, is there one most memorable experience, something that you think about more often, say, than anything else that happened to you in the service?
Oh, the awful destruction and the senseless. The poor people that lost their lives. What a country can do when it's fully geared up, people are all behind it, just not get overrun. I guess that's about it.
Is there a a person that you can think of that you remember from your military time, a most memorable character?
Not really. Some of the chief petty officers I met were memorable. I don't know. Just good G.I. Joes, I guess.
Good buddies.
Good buddies, yeah.
You went through a lot of anguish and you were under fire, but still I have to ask you, was there a funny thing that happened to you, a humorous experience in your career?
Well, it happened on Saipan, I guess. The story was that Garapan Pia had a good, not Garapan, what, someplace had a, oh, Malby Point Country Club had a, as a country club. And you'd hear them come, hey, how do you get to Malby Point Country Club? And we say, you're hearing things, there's no such thing. That went on and on. These guys wanted to know where it was, you know, it was a good time. And it wasn't no such thing. I don't know if that's funny or not.
Well, it's nice that they kept looking for the place.
Oh, GIs always wanted a good time.
Absolutely. Is there anything that I haven't asked you this morning that your family's going to get a copy of this tape and you are, historians are going to look at it, but is there something that you'd like to add that I haven't thought to ask you this morning?
Well, I want to say that barring the war, it was a good vacation, a good experience to see these places. You know, I've traveled some since I got out, but never to these places. I've always wanted, well, we did go to England, but no place where I was, like Swansea, in South Wales. I never got down to where I was. I guess that's about it.
All right, Everett Kimball, thank you for coming in today. We appreciate it.
I hope I wasn't too jabberish.
Absolutely not.
Okay.